Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Mem Tet. Today's daf is being dedicated by Tuvi Asis, an honorary member of our Daf Yomi class every morning in honor of Tuvi Atiye in Panama. Today's daf is being studied by Elul Nishmat, Avraham ben Esther, and the Rebbe Baruch Rafael ben Miriam, Ruach Hashem Tanichem, Began Eden. We are starting on Mem Tet Amud Rishon, four lines down. Bizman Shehem Lachim. We learned in the Mishnah on Mem Zayin Amud Bet that certain items are considered mosif haval only when they're wet, only when they're moist. The Mishnah said you have tevin, zagin, mochin, asabin, only when these items have moisture to it. So the Gemara asks, ibaya lehu, lachin mahmat atzman, or dilma lachin mahmat davar acher. Where is this moisture coming from? Is the moisture coming from itself? Meaning, the moisture that we're saying produces this heat, is it self-produced? Or dilma lachin mahmat davar acher? Or does the moisture come from somewhere else? Now, Rashi tells us that dibur matchil lachin mahmat atzman, mehamimut tefeh melachin mahmat mashkin, shenoflot alehim shiyabshu. Now she tells us that if it produces its own moisture, that's hotter than if it gets wet from somewhere else. So the Gemara says, Tashema, lo tebe, lo beteben, not with straw, velo bezagin, that's the parts of the grapes, velo bemochin, and not with the cloths, velo ba'asabim, and not with grass. Bizman she'en lachin, when they are moist. I amar pishtama lachin mahmat davar acher. If you tell me where it's talking, that the moisture is coming from somewhere else, shapir, it makes sense. Ela I amar lachin mahmat atzman. But if you're saying it's talking where it produces its own moisture, mochin lachin mahmat atzman, eki mashkachat la. How do you have mochin, which is pieces of wool that produce their own moisture? Which means you want to tell me these other items like the remnants of the grapes and things like that to have their own moisture. However, how do you have a case of a piece of wool, mochin, that produces its own moisture? So the Gemara says, no, you have a case. Memarta de bene atme. It's talking about the pluckings in between the legs of the animal. In those areas over there, they're filled with sweat. And therefore, when you pull those pieces of wool from between the legs of the animal, and there is moisture there. It's natural moisture from itself. And therefore, we're talking about, when it says lachin, could be those types of mochin. And therefore, only those items, because those items that produce their own heat are hotter. And that's what the Mishnah is coming to tell you. Masha'en ken, if the moisture came from somewhere else, that's not considered hot enough to be considered mosif haval. Again, according to Rashi, that's learning. That when the moisture comes from itself, it's hotter. Once the Gemara over here is saying that we can have a case where the moisture comes from itself, so you cannot learn a kol sheken, where with the water comes, the moisture comes from an external source. Because when the moisture comes from itself, it's hotter. And therefore, Davka, in this case, could be the Mishnah's considering it Mosif Haval. But in the case where the moisture comes from an external source, maybe that's not considered hot enough to be considered Mosif Haval. That's the way Rashi will learn the Sugya. The Gemara says, Veha detani Rabbi Yoshaya. That which we learned in the Braita of Rabbi Yoshaya. Tomnim b'chsut yevesha. You're allowed to make atmana with a ksut. Ksut would be, let's say, a garment that is dry. Uferot yevishim. And dried fruit. Avalo bechsut laha, but not on a garment that is moist. Velo beperot lahin, and not on a, not with moist fruit. Ksut laha mahmat atzma hechi mashkahata. Again, you're telling me it has to come from itself. How do you have a garment, a ksut, that has its moisture from itself? A garment doesn't produce its own moisture. So the Gemara says again, Memarta de bene atle. We're talking about where the garment is made from the pluckings of the shearings of the animal that come between its legs. It seems it's a new garment, and you just took these moist, sweaty pieces from the animal, and you produced the garment. So therefore, the conclusion of this first Gemara is, when it says in the Mishnah, Lachin, it means Lachin Mahmat Atzman, and we created a case, even by Mochin, where it's talking about Marta de Bene Atme. Now, it should be pointed out that Harambam, in Perek Bet, in Elchot Shabbat, says, Asur Lahatmin Bemochin Lachin, Mahmat Davar Acher, Va'afilu Mahmat Atzman. Harambam learns the opposite from Rashi. Harambam says it's asur to be matmin with mochin that are moist from an external source, and even if they're moist from themselves. So from Rambam it sounds like that moisture from itself is less hot, and that's the chidush of the Gemara. So comes out of Machloket Rishonim exactly if what is produces more heat, and therefore what is the chidush of this Gemara. We go further. The new Mishnah. Tomnin b'chsut u'b'perot b'chanfei yona b'nesoret shel harshin u'b'neoret shel pishtan daka. וביהודה אוסר בדקה ומתיר בגסה. The Mishnah says, you're allowed to make hatmana with a ksut. Again, ksut is a suit, garment. ובפירות would be fruit. You're sticking the pot in fruit. בכנפי יונה, with the wings of doves. You have a pile or a heap of dove wings, and you want to stick the pot in the dove wings in order to make an insulation. It's mutar. These items are not mosif haval. Ubenesoret shel harshim. Nesoret shel harshim would be sawdust, that she says. Shemenasirin and nagarim min ha'isim. That the nagar, that would be the carpenters, that they chip from the wood. Ubeneoret shel pishtan. Neoret shel pishtan would be as she says, dak dak, the thin pieces that they cut from the flax. Rabbi Yehuda oser bedaka. Rabbi Yehuda says no. The daka, the thin pieces, are heat producing. Umatir begasa. He only allows the thicker pieces. So we have a machloket by the case of the neoret shel pishtan. Is it Hatana Kama says the daka is the one that's not musif aval, whereas the Biyuda says it's the gasa, it's the thick pieces that are not musif aval. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shekuni Yom Baruch. Amen. Gemara. Amar Rav Yanai. Rav Yanai taught, Tefilin Sirichin Guf Naki Ke'elisha Baal Kenafayim. Tefilin, one that wears tefillin, needs a clean body like Elisha, like the fellow called Elisha Baal Kenafayim, the fellow of the story with the wings, which we'll see the story in a moment. That she, the Gemara says, Maihi, what does it mean, Gufnaki? What does it mean you need a clean body when you wear the tefillin? Abaye Amar, Shelo Yafiyach Bahen. That he should not pass gas when he has the tefillin, which means he should not wear tefillin unless he has the ability to control himself when he has the urge to pass gas, that he has the ability to control himself. That would be considered gufnaki. Dava Amar, Hava comes along and says, Shelo Yishan Bahem, that he has to have the self-control that he does not fall asleep with them. What's the problem with falling asleep with the tefillin? That she says, Shem Meyafiyah. Again, because he might come and pass gas, which means Rava says, we're really not worried when a person is awake. A person is awake, it's possible for him to maintain guf naki. He has to have the ability not to fall asleep, even momentarily, with his tefillin. You have to remember, in the old days, they wore the tefillin all day long. So therefore, it was a definite challenge to try to stay awake for every moment without falling asleep, even a little bit, because once a person falls asleep, it's possible for him to pass gas unwittingly. Or, as she says, yir ekeri. Or in his dream, he can have a seminal discharge when he has a tefillin on. Okay? So that's that opinion. Just to do the Tosafot over here. Abaye amash lo yafi yahbaim. Abaye says he has to be clean, that he does not pass gas. Shiyuchal lishmor ha'atzmom la'afiyach ad shiyasir tefillin. Kedeparish bekontras. Like Rashi explained. Aval lo chay shem yishan. The first opinion was not concerned that you might come and fall asleep. Now, forgot the parim lo yuchal lezer meshina. The Rava matzli gam shiachol amid atzmo b'sha'at shetochazenu hashena. So the first opinion says, no, it's difficult to control yourself from sleeping. That might be too hard. The second opinion is more mahmir, that you even have to control yourself from even a temporary sleeping because of the problems that can happen. Shelo yeshan pitom. You should not sleep suddenly. Miyu, Tosfot says, Abaye namem odeh dasu lishan daim. Now, we all agree, even Abaye says, you cannot sleep with the tefillin. But the issue of guf naki that we're discussing is that you have to have the ability to make sure that if the urge comes, a person can control himself. But Rava says, you have to know that you will not even fall asleep temporarily. Tosafot, the next tibur ha-mafesh, shelo yishan bahen, mishum shelo yafiyach bahen b'sha'at shena, or mishum esayach ha-darat. Tosafot gives two reasons why sleeping with the tefillin would be asur. Either because he might pass wind, or because his mind is off the tefillin. It seems that you need a conscious understanding that you're wearing tefillin. When a person falls asleep, obviously you cannot have that kavana. Aval mishum keri en lahosh. But Tosafot is not concerned about that he might have a seminal discharge. We have a machloket Rashi and Tosafot. What is the gezerah of shelo yishan bahem? Where Rashi is concerned even about Baal Keri, Tosafot is not concerned about that issue. Now the question is, who is this Elisha Baal Kenafayim? They're telling you, you have to have a guf naki like Elisha Baal Kenafayim. Who is Elisha Baal Kenafayim? So the Gemara says, V'amai Kari Le Baal Kenafayim. Why do they call this Elisha the master of the wings? One time the Roman government passed a decree against the Jewish nation. Anybody that's going to wear tefillin, yinakru et moho. They're going to pierce his brain in the spot where they wear the tefillin. Which means they didn't want to wear people to wear tefillin shel rosh in public. Again, you have to remember, in the olden days, they would wear their tefillin shel rosh all day long, in public as well. So they said, anybody that's caught wearing tefillin shel rosh, on that spot where they wear the tefillin, they're going to pierce their brain. V'aya Elisha manicham v'yotze lashuk. Elisha was not scared. He went out and he wore it in the marketplace. V'au kasdur achad, one of the Roman generals or officers, saw him with the tefillin, ratz mepanav. So now Elisha ran away. Veratz acharav, and the kazdur chased him. Chivat shegi aitzlo natlan merosho. When he caught up to him, so Elisha took the tefillin and just he took him off his head quickly. Vachazan biyado, and he held them in his hand. Amar lo maze biyadecha. So the Kazdur says, what's that in your hand? Amar lo kanfei yonah. He said, I'm holding the wings of a dove. Pashat et yado, v'nimsi'u kanfei yonah. And sure enough, he opened his hand, and the tefillin miraculously turned into the wings of dove. Lefichach korin oto. That's why they call this man Elisha Baal Kenafayim. Elisha, the master of the wings. Because that's what happened. So the Gemara asks, Umay shena kanfeyuna mishar ofot? Now why did he choose, when he gave his statement that he has dove wings in his hand? Why did he pick the wings of doves? Mishum de'amtil kenesi Yisrael liyona. Because the Jewish people are compared to a dove. Shene emar, and the pasuk says, kanfeyuna, the wings of a dove, nechpaba kesef, that are covered in silver. Ma yona, just like a dove. Kenafeha maginot aleha, its wings protect it, which means the way the dove fends off its enemies is by flapping its wings. So its wings serve as a protection. Af Yisrael, mitzvot maginot alehen. So too, the mitzvot that the Jewish people perform protect them. So therefore there's a connection between Am Yisrael and their performance of the mitzvot. That's our wings. Our wings are the mitzvot. They protect us just like the Yonah's wings protect it. So that's why he gave the mashal of the kanfei Yonah. Because now he was wearing the tefillin, now he's in trouble. But because he fulfilled the mitzvah of the tefillin protected him, and the miracle happened to him. So therefore, he gave that example, and it came true. Now, the only question, or few questions here on this sugya, is, Tosfot has a question here. It says, Natlan Mirosho. When he saw the kazdur coming after him, he took the tefillin off his head. So comes the Tosafot and says, that, how can he take the tefillin off his head? Seemingly he should have been willing to risk his life for the tefillin. Why? Because we see in the Gemara Sanhedrin Ayin Dalid that when the Romans, or when the Malchut, makes a gezerah, you have to be willing to give up your life on any of the mitzvot. Which is, even though we know the three cardinal sins, Gilui Arayot, Shefikut Emin Avodah Zarah, that's in all times. But when the Malchut makes a gezerah against religion, then already you have to give your life for all the mitzvot. So why was he getting scared that he took off his tefillin from his head? He should have just kept the tefillin. That's what asks. So he says that that's when the goyim tell you, for example, to do something against your religion. Even if they tell you to dress like the goyim, then already you have to be willing to give up your life. There's no avon not to have tefillin on your head for a few minutes. He says, which means a lot of people don't wear tefillin all day long. So that would tell you he's trying to do an avera. It's an avera not to have a tefillin on your head. So therefore he wasn't obligated, let's say, to give up his life. Question is here, the Gemara started off by saying, tefillin, to wear them you need guf naki ke'elisha ba'al kenafayim. Now, where do you see in the story that Elisha ba'al kenafayim had guf naki? You see he sacrificed his life for the tefillin, a miracle happened to him, but it doesn't say anywhere in the story that his body was clean. Now, the assumption obviously is he was a tzaddik and his body was clean. Actually, that's what the Tosafot says. In Tosafot, the Buddha Elisha says, Tosafot says it's almost like an automatic. Since the miracle happened to him, the assumption must be that he did have guf naki. But I saw, brought down from the Maril Diskin, a beautiful explanation. He wants to say like this. Why did Elisha Baal Kenafayim take off the tefillin? Because once the kazdur was chasing him, he was getting nervous. When a person gets nervous, what happens? He has a tendency to pass gas. And therefore, the moment that he saw the kazdur chasing him, right away, he took off the tefillin. And therefore, we see that he was very, very makpid. by taking off the tefillin, Mari Diskin says, it slowed him down. Because you obviously slow down when you're taking off your tefillin. He says, and that's why he got caught. Because he was so zahir to take off his tefillin, shelo yafiyach bahem, so the kazdur got caught up to him. So therefore, Borei Olam made a miracle for him. But you see, that's why it says you have to be zahir-like. And Isha Bar can find that even at the risk of his life, he did such a thing. So he says, according to this over here, we can answer Tosfot's question. Tosfot's question was, how do you take off the tefillin? You're supposed to risk your life for the mitzvot against Gezirat Malchut. Adrabah, he took off the tefillin over here because that's the halakha. Because he has to take off the tefillin. Shema yafiyach b'ez. He didn't take it off because the Romans said don't wear tefillin. He took the tefillin off because of Gufnaki. And that's why the Gemara says, Sirichim Gufnaki Kelisha. The Tosafot quotes a midrash in Dibur Matil Kenafeh Meginot Aleha that the wings of the dove protect it. So he says, "Kol ha'ofot kishen yigian." All birds, when they rest, ninuchin al gabesela, they just perch themselves on a rock and they rest for a moment. Vayona. The dove, how does it rest? It just closes down one of its flaps and it flies with one of its wings, which means it's always flying, it's always moving. So the rabbis want to explain that that's the mashal that Elisha was saying. Elisha was saying that when the Jewish people, let's say, lax up a little in their mitzvot, it's never totally laxing up, because Elisha took off his tefillin shel rosh, but he still had his tefillin shel yad on. That already was under his garment. So that's like the dove, where he's still flying with one wing at all times. Jeez, he didn't devoid himself from the mitzvah totally. That's why he's comparing himself to Kanfei Yonah, that the mitzvah is still being done like the dove. Even at the time that it rests, it's still flapping its wings. Comes the Mishnah and go further. Comes the Gemara. Sorry, goes further. Benitzoret shel harshim. Gemara says from the Mishnah that one of the things that is permissible to use is sawdust. Meaning you can make hatmana in sawdust. Ibayelu, Rabbi Yehuda. When Rabbi Yehuda came along and said that Oser Bedaka, he forbids if it's fine. Ane Soret Shel Harshin Ka'e or Ane Oret Shel Pishtan Ka'e? What case was Rabbi Yehuda talking about? Did he mean when it's fine, meaning when the sawdust is fine, it's forbidden? Or was he talking about the next case, when the Pishtan, when the flax is fine, it's forbidden? Because all Rabbi Yehuda says is Oser Bedaka. Well, we have a few cases where that statement could be referring to. Is it going back on Daka sawdust or Daka Pishtan? Tashema, come and listen. Detanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ne'oret Shel Pishtan Daka Harehu Kezebel. Ne'oret Shel Pishtan, the flax, when it's very, very thin, it is like zebel. Zebel is garbage. And we learned in the Mishnah previously that garbage is considered mosif aval. Shma minna, proof positive. And ne'oret shel pishtan ka'eh, shma minna. Proof positive that what? Rabbi Yehuda must have been referring to ne'oret shel pishtan. So if machloket by pishtan, Tanakama says the daka is okay, but Rabbi Yehuda says the daka is asur. And we go to the new Mishnah. Matnitin, tomnin b'shalachin. You're allowed to make atmana with shalachin. What is shalachin? That she says orot. That's skins. Skins of the animal. Seems that these skins do not mosif havam. Umetatrin otam. And the Mishnah says that they are non-mukseh. Which means whether you use them for atmana or not, skins of animals on Shabbat are not mukseh. Why? Because you can sit on them. You can use them like a rug, and therefore they have a permissible function. Begizisemer, you're allowed to use wool shearings v'atmana. However, ve'en metaltelin otam. The wool is mukse. That she says why? Because it's designated for spinning and sewing and making garments. So the Gemara says, ketzadu ose. So what do you do if you insulated your pot with wool? How are you going to get the pot out? Which means you can't touch the gizeh semer, because the gizeh semer is mukseh. So how are you supposed to get the food out? So the Gemara says, Mishnah says, notel et hakisui. You can pick up the pot cover, ve'en noflot, and the gizeh semer will fall by themselves. Which means it seems the whole pot is covered with gizeh semer. So you just lift the pot cover up. Now, without touching it directly, the gizeh semer will fall to the sides. The only question that she says is, well, the pot cover now, going into Shabbat, has something mukseh on it. Why doesn't the pot cover become a basis? Which is, we learned that if you have a heter item with mukseh on it, it becomes a basis of bar mukseh, therefore the pot cover should become mukseh. That's the question that she says. Because it's on top of the pot itself. The gizeh semer are resting on the pot itself. Huh? Oh, so she says something similar to that. She says, "Lo echpat lan, de lo na'asit basisin she'en asui ila lekasot kedera." Now he's saying that different. He's saying the pot cover is made to cover a pot, which means it's not made to stick things on it, so to speak. Which means it's not like a table, let's say, that's made where you're supposed to put stuff on it. That could become a basis. Here, the fact that you have some hatmana on it, that's not what a pot cover is made for, to hold things on top of it. The pot cover's primary function is what? To cover a pot. So that she's giving you a klal in basis, which means it's got to be an item that's normally made to put things on. But if the pot cover's primary function is to put, to cover a pot, it's made to cover something else. Not that it's made for something to go on top of it. So even if you put something on top of it, it does not have the ability to make it a basis. Comes the Mishnah and says, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah taught kupa. One of the cases we learned yesterday was a box. You have a kupa, let's say a box, and you have a pot in the box. And you surrounded it with mukhin, with cloths before Shabbat, meaning you made hatmana b'davar she'enu mosif aval. Now the question is, how are you going to serve, or how are you going to take from this pot? Well, what's the concern? Well, if you're going to take from the pot itself and take it out, all your mukhin that are in the box are going to fall in. Because the pot is in the hole, let's say, it's in the cavity. It's been surrounded by mukhin. You're going to take it out, what's going to happen? It's going to cave in, all the different things. Now you're not going to be able to put it back in the box, because you can't move the mohin, because the mohin are mukseh. So Rabbi Azabah, they want to know, when you have hatmana in a box, surrounded with mohin inside the box, how do you serve from that pot? So Rabbi Azabah, Azayomer, kupa, mate al sida venotel. The only option is, you have to lift, tilt the entire box, and that's how you have to serve from that pot. Why? Shemi yitol. Because lest you might come to take the pot out itself, then and now you're not going to be able to return it. So I explained to you why. Because the mukhin are going to fall in the middle now, and now you're not going to be able to stick it back in the box, because the cavity is going to be filled up with mukhin, and there are mukseh. Comes again what Mishnah concludes and says, V'achamim omrim, notel u'mahzir. Chamin say, you could take it out and you could put it back. The Gemara will explain exactly what Chamin mean. Comes the Gemara. Yativ Rabbi Yonatan ben Achinai ve Rabbi Yonatan ben Elazar ve Yativ Rav Hanina bar Hama Gabayu. So, there were rabbis, three rabbis, they were sitting together. Ve kame ba'yelehu. That a question. Shelachin shel bala bayitnan. When you said that the skins of an animal are non-mukseh, were you talking about the skins of a private person, a bala bayit? Aval shel uman, but maybe of a craftsman, of somebody that deals with selling skins, kevan de kapid alai, who since could be, he's makpid. A craftsman doesn't want to maybe sit on his animal skins and use them because they're going to ruin, and he's not going to be able to sell them. So maybe you'll say, kevan de kapid alai, an uman is makpid, lo metaltelin alayu. So therefore, maybe our Mishnah that said that you can move the skins on Shabbat and not mukseh, maybe it's only talking about the skins of a bala bayit, but not of an uman. Or dilma, or maybe, shil uman tenan. Maybe the Mishnah is even talking about an uman, they call sheken, shil bala bayit, and all the more so bala bayit. So that was the question. So the Gemara says, Amar lehu Rabbi Yonatan ben Elazar, mistabra shil bala bayit tenan. Makes sense that we're only talking about skins of a bala bayit that are non-mukseh. Aval shel uman, but of one that sells them, meaning one that deals in skins, kapid alayu. It seems that he would be makpid, again, not to ruin them, and therefore they are mukseh. Comes again, Gemara says, Amar li Rav Hanina bar Hama, kach amar Rabbi Yishmael bar Rabbi Yoseh. This is what the Mishmael Rabbi Yosef said. Abba, said Rabbi Yosef, my father, Shalhahava. My father was an Uman Le'abed Orot. He dealt in selling skins of animals. And what? Ve'amar, and he once told me, Haviyu Shalhin V'neshev Alehen. He once told me, bring me skins in order that we should sit on them. So what do you see over here? An uman sits on the skins. They're not makpid. Now we have a very interesting mahloket here between the Shi and Tosafot. When did this story happen? Which means the Biyo said, the Biyo Ishmael saying, but the Biyo said that his father was an uman. The Biyo said was an uman who used to sell these items. So when did he ask to sit on them? The Shi says, behol. During the week. During the week is a little strange. Where Tosfot comes along and says, Perush lach ve'amar aviyu li shalchein b'shabbat. Oh, according to Tosfot, we understand that the whole proof of the story is that it was on Shabbat, and he was telling him, bring them to me to sit on them. So you see a great story that proves that these skins are not mukseh b'shabbat because you sit on them. Even if what? Even if you're an uman. So why is that she have to learn over here that it's talking about the week? Why do you have to go out of the way to talk about this happened during the weekday? So I saw an interesting explanation in the Mishmeret Moed. So he comes along and says, later on, we're going to see an opinion in the Braita that the Chachamim argue and say that Shalachim of an Uman are Mukseh. Shalachim of an Uman are Mukseh. Now, if Hakamim argue, even though Rabbi Yosef was an Uman, he cannot have argued in his life against the prevalent opinion. So therefore, Rashi did not want to say this happened on Shabbat, because then it comes out that Rabbi Yosef was a Da'at Yachid, is arguing on Shitat HaChamim that really say it's Asur. Why do you want to make the Biyoseh go against even though let's say he had his personal opinion, but the Yachid cannot go against the Rabbim. So he says that's why he'd rather say it was during the week. So what's the story just proving to you? That Umanim are not Makpid. And therefore, your principle that you said an Uman is Makpid, I'm bringing your story over here of the Biyoseh, that he was not makpid. So according to Rashi, the Mishmeret Moed writes, it's very nice why the Gemara says, Abba shalachahaba. My father was an uman that used to sell skins. Why? Because that's the whole point of the story. Which is he's trying to say that he was one that sold it, he wasn't makpid. He would sit on them. But according to Tosfot, Tosfot's whole proof is, what do you have to say that for? It just should have said, Abba, my father, tiltel orot shel uman. My father used to move on Shabbat skins from a craftsman. What do you have to say that he himself was a... what's that vital part of he himself? According to that, she understand why I have to say he himself. Because that's the whole point of the story. That she's trying to show that an Uman is not Makpid. And therefore, that she learns, Afilu Behor, where Tosfot says on Shabbat. Based on this, Tosfot says the halakha would be like Nabi Yosef. Why? Because once you have a story that somebody did it on Shabbat, we have the rule Ma'aseh Rav. The story always takes precedence. From Rashi, this is really not a Ma'aseh Rav. This is just a Hanagah that he did during the week. In any event, the Gemara says, Metibe. Gemara has a question from a Braita. Nesarin shel Ba'alabayit, let's say planks of wood, of a Ba'alabayit, metaltelin otan. You can move them on Shabbat. They're not mukse. Veshel uman, but of a craftsman, en metaltelin otan. You're not allowed to move the planks of wood on Shabbat. They're mukse. But if the Uman before Shabbat designated them in order to use these planks of wood to serve bread for guests on them, then it doesn't matter. Even an Uman is not Mukseh. But what do you see? That the materials of an Uman are Mukseh. Gemara says now, Shani Nesarim de Kapid Alayu. Planks of wood is different. Because for sure an Uman is Makpid, because he doesn't want his planks to warp. However, when it comes to a Shalachim, these skins, the Uman maybe is not Makpid. So you have no question from this, but I can tell you planks of wood are different. Tashema, come and listen. Orot, you have skins. Ben Abudin, Uben She'en Abudin, whether they are tanned, tan skins, or they're not tan skins, mutar letaltelan b'shabbat. They are non-mukseh b'shabbat. Velo amru abudin, when does tanning come into the picture? Ela le'anyan tum'ah bilvad, which means for a skin to be susceptible to receive tum'ah, it has to be a finished product. What is a finished product? Only after it is tanned. However, before it is tanned, it's not considered a finished product, and therefore it's not susceptible to tum'ah. But regarding mukseh, whether it's abudin or not abudin, it is non-mukseh. That is the blaita. So comes the Gemara and says, my love, let us conclude from this blaita, lo shena shel ba'alabayit velo shena shel uman. The blaita does not make a hiluk between ba'alabayit skins or an uman skins. It's saying all skins are non-mukseh. So there you go, I have a proof positive that what? Even an uman skins are non-mukseh. The Gemara says, no. Shel ba'alabayit. This blaita is talking about, we're only talking about the skins of a ba'alabayit. So the Gemara asks, aval shel uman mai. Oh, but what do you want to tell me? What about the skins of an Uman? In metalteli? You want to tell me them mukseh? Iyache, if so, ha detani. That which the Braita said, velo amru abudin, ela le'anyan tum'a bilvad. You came and told me that when does tanning make a difference? That makes a difference, le'anyan tum'a. So now you gave me a case of what? Where, if it's tanned or not tanned for mukseh purposes, doesn't make a difference. But when are we going to have a difference? The difference is going to be if it's tanned or not, then ya tum'ah. Why did you have to jump to tum'ah? V'liflog v'litni bedida. Keep it all in the case of mukseh. And say, b'meh devarim amurim v'shel ba'al habayit. Aval b'shel uman la. Which means, if you're looking for a chiluk, why do you have to jump out of mukseh, stay in mukseh, and you can still make a chiluk, and say, when do you say that there's no chiluk between abudin and non-abudin? That's when it's a balabayit skins, they're not going to be mukseh. However, when it comes to an Umman, so then already we're going to have a Chiluk Ligabe Mukseh. What's going to be the Chiluk? The Chiluk is going to be that when it comes to a Umman, once they tan it, that she says it's Mukseh. Because once you tan the item, now it becomes Hashuv. So keep the Chiluk in Mukseh itself. You have to introduce Tum'ah to make a Chiluk. Again, let the Braita say. When it comes to the skins of a Bala Bayit, then what? No Hiluk ben Abudim, ben Enan Abudim, not Mukseh. Aval, when it comes to the skins of an Uman, yes Hiluk, Le'enyal Mukseh. If they're not tanned, the Uman is not Makpid, non-Mukseh. If they are tanned, it is Mukseh. Where did you have to jump to Tum'ah to find the Hiluk between Abudim and not Abudim? So from the fact that you see the Braita did not do that, so Ela, you must see that what? That there's no difference between Bala Bayit and Uman. They all learn Mukseh. So the Gemara says, La, no proof. Kula be Bala Bayit Kamayri. I'll tell you what, don't introduce Uman in this Braita at all. Uman never entered the picture. The Braita was only discussing Bala Bayit, which means what it said, Ben Abudin, Ben Al Abudin, it's only talking Bala Bayit. It wasn't talking about everyone. And therefore the Braita said, when it comes to Bala Bayit skins, there's no Chiluk in Mukseh between Abudin and non-Abudin. Oh, now once you're only talking about a Bala Bayit, so therefore where's the only difference that's going to be? Well, in Yan Tum'ah, there's going to be a difference between Abud and not Abud. So therefore, you really have no proof. I can really tell you, but the skins of an Uman are Mukseh. No proof from this Braita. The Gemara concludes, Ketana'e. Actually, regarding the skins of an Uman, it's a Mahloket amongst the Tana'im. Orot Shemala Ba'a Metatlinotan. Veshel Uman E Metatlinotan. That's the opinion of Tanakama. The Rabbi Yose Omer, Echadze Metaltelin Otan. Whereas the Rabbi Yose argues in Tanakh Kaman says, either one is non-Mukseh. So actually, the Maskanat Milta, somebody asks you, what's the deen with Oroch and Uman? It's Mahlukat Tanaim. Whereas Tanakh Kaman says, yes Mukseh, because he's Makpi. The Rabbi Yose says, Echadze Metaltelin Otan. Comes the Gemara further. Hadur Yatve. The rabbis sat again another time. Vekamibayalehu. And the question came up. Haditnan. That which we're going to learn in the Mishnah later on in the 7th Perek. Avot melachot arba'im chaser achad. That we know that there are 39 primary melachot that are forbidden on Shabbat. Keneged mi. To who do they correspond? Where do they get this number 39? What do you mean, where do they get this number 39? Obviously they learned it from the Melachot of the Mishkan. What do you mean, Keneged Mi? So Tosfot says, obviously there was a tradition on the number. Because if you're just going to say that they learned the Melachot from, let's say, the Melachot that were needed in the construction of the Mishkan, how did they know to come to 39? Why? Because a lot of the melachot are similar to each other. So, like for example, borer, zorer, miraked, those are three melachot that the Gemara later on says, they're all similar. So technically, if we didn't have a tradition that we knew you had to get to the number 39, I might have counted all those as one, and might come up with 37. So it seems that there was a certain tradition that they knew that you have to come up with 39. And therefore they knew exactly how many melachot that were done in the Mishkan, how to count them. So that's the Gemara's question. Avot melachot arba'im chaser achat keneged mi. Which means, where did they get, what are they corresponding? Amar lehu Rav Hanina bar Chama keneged avodot ha-mishkan. So he comes along and says, it's keneged the avodot that were done in the Mishkan. Rashi, Avodot HaMishkan, Otan Amenuyot Sham, those that are enumerated over there, Beperek Klal Gadol, Hayut Tzrichim the Mishkan, Uparashat Shabbat Nismecha LaParashat Melechet HaMishkan Elmod Emena. Which is, how do you even know that the Mishkan has anything to do with Shabbat Melachot? Because if you look in the Torah juxtaposes the construction of the Mishkan and the Isur of Shabbat. So the rabbis learned from there must be a direct connection between Melechet HaMishkan and Shabbat. And therefore we're learning that the Melachot that were done in the Mishkan, so those are the 39 Melachot. We have to find 39 Melachot in Mishkan that what? That are going to correspond to Isur Shabbat. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar lo Rabbi Yonatan Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yonatan Rabbi Elazar came along and said, Kach amar Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yose ben Lekunya keneged melacha melachto umelechet shebatorah 40 chaser achat. Well, this is a big kedusha. He says, if you look in the Torah and you count how many times the word melacha is written throughout the Torah, conjugated differently, sometimes melacha, melachto, melechet, if you count it up, you'll find it's written 39 times. And therefore, from there, we knew already, there's 39 melachot on Shabbat. Now, of course, it's as usual, if you go count it up, you're going to find that there's much more than 39 melachot, maybe close to 60 of them. So the different rabbis try to give answers exactly where they came up, how to calculate this over here. So just one answer that I saw, he brings down from Rabbeinu Hananel. He says, Omnam yesh batura yoter ma'arba'im pa'amim ha'mila melacha, ela שכל אלו שאינם אלא בדיבור ולא מלאכה ממשית אינם בחשבון. Which means they're only counting the words מלאכה that are active, where it's talking about somebody was doing מלאכה, not on just a noun. I mean, it has to be the verb מלאכה, where it was an active מלאכה, somebody or somebody was doing. We're not counting just the nouns in the Torah that are written. He says, "V'chen elu shenichtav imem avoda o asiya, or any melacha word that's written next to it, the word avoda o asiya, that's also not counted, because already it says avoda o asiya. It's got to be a pure melacha in the as a verb, and then already you'll come up with 39. Okay, we go further. So comes the Gemara and says, again, of course, this opinion agrees, as I said earlier, that you learn it from the Mishkan. 39 times melacha, but with melachot. So we just agree that, of course, it stems from the Mishkan, but as I said, which ones in the Mishkan do you get? How many from the Mishkan are you going to have to come up with? So they know you have to come up with 39. So comes the Gemara and says, Gemara has a question. Ba'ei Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef had a she'ela. ויבוא הביתה לעשות מלאכתו. This is a pasuk by Yosef HaSadik. It says he came home to the house of Potiphar to do his work. So that's it, מלאכתו. You have a מלאכתו in the Torah now. So he wants to know, ממניינהו או לא? Is that part of the count, that one, or not? Which means, if it's part of the count, that's your 39, or don't you count it? Maybe that's the next one. Maybe that's number 40. So the Gemara says, Amar le'abaye veliti sefer Torah velimni. All right, you have a question. Let's bring a sefer Torah and let's count. Which means, you want to know if that's part of it or not? We have a sefer Torah. Let's go through the whole Torah and count the how many times it's the same menaga. Mi lo amar rabba bar barchana bar yochanan lo zazu misham al cheviu sefer Torah manum. Don't we have a precedence to this? Don't we have another story where the Yohanan, where the Abba Bar Hanan, the name of Yohanan, where there was a case where they had a she'elah, a certain issue in the Torah, and they brought the Sefer Torah out, and they counted it. So therefore, that's count the Sefer Torah. Let's count the letters. Amar le, kika mesaf kelizna. Let me explain to you my sefek. Mishum dichtiv, because we have another pasuk. The pasuk says, "Ve'amelacha haita dayam." When the Jewish people were in the midbar, after they finished towards the end of the construction of the Mishkan, the pasuk says the work was enough ve'oter, which means Am Yisrael finished the work. Now, there's a question how to learn this pasuk. What does Ve'amelacha haita dayam mean? Now, the rabbi that's asking this question says, one of these two pasukim is not part of the count. Either we're taking the Yosef pasuk out, or this pasuk that's written by the Mishkan, Ve'amelacha haita dayam. You can't have both of them in there. If you have both of them in there, you got 40. He says, my question is, which one of these two do you delete? Right, what's the safek? So he says, Ve'amelacha haita dayam. If you're going to count Ve'amelacha haita dayam as part of the count, then the pasuk of Yosef, when it says vayavo la'asot, vayavo abayta la'asot melachto, that pasuk will not mean melacha mamash. That'll mean that he was actually going into the house of Potiphar to do his needs. Meaning Yosef intended that morning when he went into the house to commit the sin with the wife of Potiphar. And the Torah is just writing it in a nice way. It's saying his work. But his work really means to succumb to his passion. And therefore, that's not a real work. That's his needs. So therefore, don't count that one. Now, what ended up happening? When he went in, he saw the image of his father, Yaakov. And at that point, he said that if I'm going to commit this sin over here, now they're going to take his name off the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol used to wear a hoshen. It had 12 stones. Yosef's name was on it. He's going to commit this sin over here. The Kohen cannot have the breastplate where God communicates to Am Yisrael with a name that of a man that commits such a sin. So he went in with the intent to commit the sin. But what? He controlled his Yetzer Hara. He suppressed it. So if you learn like that, good, so that pasuk you can't count because that's not a real melacha. And what's the other pasuk about melacha etad dayam? You'll explain that pasuk as follows. Am Yisrael built the Mishkan themselves. So the pasuk is saying that they did the work of the construction of the Mishkan perfectly. They didn't add any stitches that they shouldn't have. They didn't flatten out pieces of metal or thin them out when they were layering the different furnishings. They didn't flatten them out more than they should have, meaning the melacha was perfect. Oh, that's very good. It's talking about actual melacha of the construction of the Mishkan. So that one will be in. And take the pasuk of Yosef out, because that's not talking about melacha, it's talking about his needs. Or Dilma, or maybe the other side. Or I could say no. The pasuk of Yosef literally means he went to the house to do work. They're like, no. And therefore, you count that. And the pasuk by the Mishkan, v'amelachata dayam, hachikama, this is what it means. V'shalim le'avita. That what? That they collected enough money. It's not referring to actual work. It means that the donations that they needed for the Mishkan, there was enough. It calls that work because any, let's say, mission that you have, in this case it was to collect money for the Mishkan, you call that a melacha. But it didn't actually mean a physical labor. So therefore this pasuk was really referring to what? Collecting money. Collecting money is not a melacha. Therefore don't count this pasuk and count the other pasuk. So that was the rabbi's question. Which one of these two pasukim do you count? Can I answer this one? Tiku. Gemara leaves it unresolved for Eliyahu Navi. Tanya keman de'amar keneged avodot ha-mishkan. We have a braita to support the opinion that says the 39 melachot are corresponding to different melachot that were done in the Mishkan. the Tanya, because we have a Braita. En Hayavin Ela Ala Melachat Shka Yotzeba Aita B'Mishkan. You're not Hayav on Shabbat, only on Melachot that similarly we found in the construction of the Mishkan. Hem Zar'u, for example, they planted, therefore Ve'atem Lot Tizra'u, therefore you cannot plant. Where did they plant? They planted the different herbs that they needed to grow in order to make the dye, in order they could dye the skins of the Mishkan. So therefore, they planted the herbs, you don't plant. Hem katsru, they cut. What did they cut? Again, the herbs, after they grew. That hem lo tiksiru. Hem eilu with the kedashim mikarka la'agala. Now, when they transported the Mishkan, they needed to take the beams of the Mishkan, and they took them from the ground, meaning from the Midbar, and they put them on wagons. Now, the ground of the Midbar is Reshut HaRabim. So they transported from the Reshut HaRabim to the wagons with Sarei Reshut HaYachid. So what do you learn from there? You can't transport on Shabbat. V'atem lo techniisum Reshut HaRabim, Reshut HaYachid. From there you learn you cannot transport on Shabbat from the public domain to the private domain. Hem horidu et kerashim ha'agala lekarka. When they arrived at the spot, they unloaded. That means they took from the Reshut HaYachid, from the wagons, to a Reshut HaRabim. V'atem lo tutziu Reshut HaYachid Reshut HaRabim. So you see the laws of transferring. Now the Gemara says another case. Hem hotziu me'agala le'agala. They actually transported the beams from one wagon to another. Which means, as they were loading the wagons, they would, you know, they would have a row of wagons. So they would pass the beams from one wagon to the wagon in front of it. Therefore you learn what? You cannot on Shabbat transfer from a private domain to a private domain, because each wagon is a private domain. So the Gemara says, what? What are you doing? Why is that a melacha? You didn't transfer domains, which I understand, public to private, private to public. But now you're telling me private to private, what's that? So the Gemara says, no, Abayev Rava Damit Arvayu Ve'etim Rava Dabar Ava Mereshut Yachid, Mereshut Yachid Derech Mereshut Rabin, which means it, the Agalot were Mereshut Yachids, but there was space between each Agala. There was Mereshut Rabin in the middle. So to transfer from a private domain to another private domain, going through a public domain, that would also be forbidden, as we see in the Mishkan. So you see a clear Braita, it's listing all the things that were done in the Mishkan. Now, it doesn't list all 39. The Mefarshim explained, it listed some of the early Melachot and some of the later Melachot, which means the first couple of Melachot are Zoreya and Kotzer. So it gave you an example. Hem Zaro, Hem Katzru. The last Melacha of the 39 is Motzi Mirshut Reshut. So therefore it gave you a sampling. It gave you from the first two that they did, and it gave you the last one that they did as well. So therefore you see what? That the Melachot that they got were actually from the Melachot that they found, 39, that they found in the Mishkan itself. Baruch Adonai Olam.